Good morning. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our God and our Redeemer. It's lovely to be speaking to you this morning. And what I would like to share is actually a picture. It's a picture that has been going round and round my head for quite some time now. And I would like to share it with you because I think there might be something to it. So here is the picture. Let me get it good and close so you can see what I'm looking at. Okay, it's a picture of two people carrying a box. It's a heavy box, and one person is bent down, struggling and straining under the weight of that heavy box. They're finding it too much to bear, and they're really unhappy about it. And then the other person says, "Stand up." And the person who's struggling thinks, well, that's ridiculous. This box is already too hard for me to carry. I can't stand up. But still the advice is stand up. So eventually they try. And when they do stand up, this is what happens. The box settles. It's no longer tipped down so that one person is carrying far more weight and really struggling. The box is level. And now the weight that this person who was struggling has is actually less. They're finally allowing their partner to take some of the weight. And all they had to do was stop bowing under the weight and stand up. And that actually made the weight itself seem less. Now, one of the reasons, I guess, that this picture has been in my mind has been that recently I felt that I am struggling under quite a lot of weight. I think this year a lot of us feel that there is a huge strain upon us. There's a lot to grapple with and struggle with. Maybe personal things, maybe financial things, maybe family things, or maybe just the huge weight of worry and concern about the state of the world at the moment. It can feel like a lot to be struggling under. And I wondered whether the advice I was hearing in this picture was actually from God. So I thought I would take a look at the Bible and see what stories I could find that tied up with this picture to see if I thought that maybe the picture had something important to tell us. Now the first image that it tied up with for me was one of Gideon. So I wanted to read you a passage from Judges. It's Judges 6 verses 11 through to 16. I'd like to read that now. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." "But sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" "But Lord," Gideon asked, "how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." The Lord answered, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together." So there's Gideon at the beginning of our story. Not a particularly powerful man, and not coming from a particularly important family. He's afraid of the Midianites, he feels worn down, he feels abandoned by God, and he's farming in a hole. And the angel of the Lord comes and calls him mighty warrior. Now, by our standards, Gideon is not a mighty warrior at all. And in fact, as the story goes on, Gideon is not instantly transformed into a mighty warrior. We know, of course, that God can bring things into being by speaking them. But that's not what this story is about. Gideon doesn't become a mighty warrior at the moment he's called that. Gideon remains quite cautious. He does go on to do what God asks him to do. The first thing God asks him to do is to go and tear down an altar to Baal, who is obviously a false god. And Gideon does tear down the altar to Baal, but he does it at night so that nobody sees it was him. Gideon remains essentially cautious even after this meeting with the angel of the Lord. So if this meeting doesn't transform Gideon instantly into a mighty warrior, what exactly does happen? I think the clue is in this line, when the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have." God doesn't ask him to transform himself into a completely different person. God gives him a task that he can achieve. God asks him to do a work that he is capable of doing. And from there, of course, wonderful things do happen, and Gideon does eventually drive out the Midianites. But that's not what I want to focus on today. I want to focus on this first bit, where God comes down, greets somebody in a hole, tells them to get up, get out, get going, and gives them a task that is achievable for them. So, I would like to have a look now at another Bible passage that I think also ties up with both pictures, and I'd like to try and slot them together to see what God is saying all together. So the second passage is Jesus talking, and it's from Matthew, and it's Matthew chapter 11, just verses 28 to 30. And it says this: "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And this is what I wanted to say about Gideon. This idea that Gideon is told to go in the strength he has ties up for me with the image that we get from Jesus telling us that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never actually carried anything in a yoke. When I think of a yoke, I think of those great big wooden things that go across your shoulders and have buckets hanging down from both ends. You sometimes see milkmaids carrying them in pictures, but I've never worn one. What it does remind me of, though, is something that I have done quite a bit, and that's carrying a small child up on my shoulders. I've done that plenty, and I feel that that carrying the weight on your shoulders is maybe what a yoke might feel like. And there's one thing I do know about carrying a child on your shoulders. Actually, it's not always the lightness of the burden that tells you how easy it's going to be to carry. Very small children, little toddlers, are actually surprisingly difficult to carry on your shoulders. If you've ever tried it, I'm sure you will recognise this, that if you put a tiny little person up there, they flop around. They don't seem to know how to sit still. They seem to have a kind of jelly spine, and they flop all over the place. And you have to contort your arms around to hold them in place so they don't fall. They also sometimes grab onto your neck really tightly and make it quite difficult to breathe. Sometimes they press right here, and it's incredibly uncomfortable. Small toddlers are also quite likely, if you put them up on your shoulders, to pull at your hair, maybe your ears, maybe even glasses or earrings if you've got them. All in all, it's a little bit like having a violent octopus riding on your shoulders. It is not an easy burden to carry. Strangely, as children get older and definitely heavier, they can become easier to carry on your shoulders, because they suddenly learn how to sit up all by themselves. They have a real spine and they use it. They don't flop about, they sit still. They don't grab at you because they've learned that that hurts and that people don't like it. So they sit still, they keep their hands calmly, and suddenly the burden becomes easier to carry. And that's what I think of when I think of Jesus talking about his burden being easy. I think that he's not telling us there is no work for us to do for the kingdom. He's telling us that the work we have to do is achievable. That there's not going to be a wiggly, squirmy weight trying to slide out of our grasp all the time. There's going to be a weight that we can settle comfortably. A nice, evenly distributed weight that we can bear and that we will be able to cope with. And that's something that I find really exciting about this passage. God offers us a lot. He offers us this world that we have, and he offers us redemption, and he offers us love. But one of the things that I always find amazing and so inviting and enticing about the way God deals with us is that he offers us a useful job. He doesn't patronise us with some silly thing that doesn't really need doing. He's not like one of those parents who give their children a bucket of water and tell them to paint the fence with it, so the child's just sat there sloshing water all over the fence, and then it dries and they redo it, and it's a completely pointless task. It might give the child a bit of joy, but it's obviously not something that really needs doing. God gives us real tasks. It might sound ridiculous. Why does this all-powerful God use us to spread the kingdom and build the kingdom? But I think he does it because it's so good for us. It's glorious to be saved. Of course it is. It is wonderful and fantastic. But how amazing and exciting it is to be part of the team. We're not just observers in God's kingdom. He invites us to join in, to be a part of it. He doesn't just invite us to drink the wine, he invites us to work in the vineyard. We get to be a part of the remarkable team that makes the new kingdom happen. I find that incredibly exciting, and I'm sure that you do too. Now sometimes, and this is where the story and the picture began this morning, sometimes it can feel like the kingdom is so far away and that what God wants us to achieve is so big and so hard and impossible. And of course, to an extent, we're right. It would be impossible for us, but we're not on our own. We have God. And he's holding at least half the weight of the box. What we need to do is to stand up. And when I started looking at the Bible and thinking about this idea of standing up, obviously it occurred to me that one of the synonyms for stand up is arise. And that's something that God says quite a lot. When he calls people, he frequently says, arise and go. Arise and do this. He says to Peter, arise, slay something and eat. He says to the man who comes on a bed to be cured, arise, stand up, pick up your bed and walk. It's quite common, and if you start looking, you find lots and lots of instances of arise in the Bible. But the one I'd like to look at now is actually Peter. Because it's Peter, and he heals two people. And I'd like to read you how he does that. And that's in Acts 9. And we're going to read verses 32 to 41. Here we go. As Peter travelled about the country, he went to visit the saints in Lydda, where he found a man named Aeneas, a paralytic who had been bedridden for 8 years. Aeneas, Peter said to him, Jesus Christ heals you. Get up and tidy your mat. Immediately, Aeneas got up. All those who lived in Lydda and Sharon saw him and turned to the Lord. In Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha, who was always doing good and helping the poor. About that time, she became sick and died, and her body was washed and placed in an upstairs room. Lydda was near Joppa. So when the disciples heard that Peter was in Lydda, they sent two men to him and urged him, "Please, come at once." Peter went with them, and when he arrived, was taken upstairs to the room. All the widows stood around him, crying and showing him the robes and other clothing that Tabitha had made while she was still with them. Peter sent them all out of the room. Then he got down on his knees and prayed. Turning towards the dead woman, he said, "Tabitha, get up." She opened her eyes, and seeing Peter, she sat up. He took her by the hand and helped her to her feet. Then he called the believers and the widows and presented her to them alive. I like this passage because you've got two completely different people. And to both of them, Peter comes in the name of Christ, in the power of Christ. He says, "Get up." Now, these people are beyond burdened. Aeneas is paralyzed, and Tabitha, well, she's so weighed down by sickness, she's actually dead. But Jesus comes, but Peter comes, and in the name of Jesus, in the power of Jesus, he says to them both, "Get up." And they do. And they get up and they get back to doing the good work that they were doing for Christ. And I think that's what God tells us to do too. And I think that's what he's been saying to me with this picture that keeps going round and round in my head. It's time to get up and do the work. And when we get up, when we get out of our hole, like Gideon, where we were cowering away, when we stop bowing down under the great weight of that box on top of us, when we get out of our beds, that's when we will find the strength and the power of Christ is there for us. But first we need to stand up, not hunker down, not crouch, not hide, not let ourselves be bowed down by the weight of our disappointments, by the weight of our panic, by the weight of our fears, by the weight of our inadequacies. There are so many difficult things. There are many difficult things in our individual lives right now, and there are so many difficult things in the world at large. It's easy to feel weighed down by them and to feel crushed. But God tells us to get up. Arise. Stand up. Let that weight shift. Let him take it back. Let God carry more of the weight so that we can carry the bit that is actually ours. Take only the yoke that we're supposed to carry. Take the easy weight that Christ is giving to us and let's get on and do the job that we've got to do. I'm excited to get on with my week to do my job for Christ. I'm excited to stand up and to do my work, and I hope that you are too.